Hey, good morning, good afternoon, and of course, good evening. Really depends on when you're listening and watching this podcast. So hey, you know, I read this post the other day about global warming, and someone made a comment saying, well, we're getting some snow up in our hills, so what's this about global warming? That's just fake news. Well, you know, I don't know about you guys, but here's what I think. When I hear global warming, I'm thinking of the whole thing as a climate change. Sure, temperatures are rising. We, you know, if it's a 1 or 2 degrees, we can't tell. If it's in the water, we don't know because we're on land. But definitely, we've seen a trend where it is getting hotter across the planet. Now, it may be seasonal, but it's hotter. And then, of course, we see all this more tornadoes, typhoons, tidal waves, torrential downpour of rain and all that. So there is something happening out there. No scientists. I'm just a guy that watches the news, watches a weather report. What do you think? Put it in the comments. Let me know. Is there such a thing as global warming, climate change? I want to hear your thoughts on that. And if there's an expert out there, maybe you'll come on the show and we'll talk about that. Anyhow, so today on this podcast, it is a mother-son podcast. So both of them are on, Robert and Nancy. And this is about Nancy had cancer. She had other difficulties with her health. And her son, Robert, stepped up and took care of her. But there are other siblings who also shared in part of helping mom out. But this is more about Robert and his mom, and less about the person who has cancer or had cancer, which would be Nancy, and more about the caregiving person, which is Robert. You know, oftentimes we miss out on talking about the caregiver, because oftentimes, you know, the caregiver is possibly getting ill, you know, losing sleep, not eating correct, because they're taking care of someone else and helping. And we tend to forget about that person. So we're going to talk a little bit more about the caregiver, about Robert, and about the situation that he went through, the changes that he had to go in his life, also with Nancy, and what the significance was about cancer and how it changed her life. So if you're ready, we're going to jump right into it. Of course, in 2016 is when you heard that dreaded phrase or sentence, you know, you have ovarian cancer. So I kind of want to find out really who you were before cancer, because I know part of your thing is that cancer kind of opened your eyes to certain things and almost like allowed you to start living, so to speak. So I wanted to find out from you, who were you before cancer? And what made, because you said in a way it was a gift. So what gift did it give you? What did it make you realize that you needed to do in your life? And for, you know, Robert, the finance guy, more or less, your life prior to and then becoming a caregiver. And then what I'd like you to be able to do is tie in this mental health. How did it affect you, Robert, caring for your mom? Because you had to make a lot of sacrifices. You know, I helped my dad. Unfortunately, he passed, so I was helping him during the hospice to the end of his life, and that changed a whole lot of things for me. And it gave me a different perspective and outlook on my mortality. But we don't have to get into that part. But if you want to. Yeah.
Well, I'd love to hear back from you. Can I jump in with this, with what I'd love Robert to share? Because this is what I think is his real gift, is we are trying to inspire caregivers on how they can make caregiving fun and take care of themselves at the same time, and how they can, and how they can like add to their army and all those things so that they're not so stressed out. Would that be okay if we discuss that?
Oh, absolutely. Because I wanted to kind of lead into that with, I'm thinking possibly the music, you know, your piano playing not only helped your mom and everybody else around, but probably helped me, you too. Because music to me, absolutely. I play music. See back there?
You got guitars. Yeah. We remember those from the,
Music is soothing, right, Robert? I mean, it's a great release.
Yeah, it's like definitely my happy place. Like even nowadays when I'm like, I don't consider myself an introvert, but I certainly like, there are moments where you feel it. So like at parties or something like that, if there's like a piano nearby, every once in a while, I'll just like, okay, I've had enough of this party. I'm just going to sit at the piano and like play. And that's my happy place. And this is where I like recharge my energy and like, I don't care if other people come around or whatever. This is just for me and I'm doing this for myself. I do that all the time.
Yeah, you know what? I would love it. Can I just jump in? I'd love you guys to have the discussion about music and stuff. I said to Robert, I want him to talk more today. Because I think that caregivers really need to hear more. You know, it's like, here's my story and stuff. But I think the two of you with music, that's why I was like, oh my God, I'm so happy you're with Chuck. I love that. Yeah. But that's just me.
Well, you know, we're kind of sort of starting right now, but Nancy, you're absolutely right as far as, you know, people look at, and I don't mean to be insensitive to anybody that's listening or to you, but oftentimes if you have a caregiver and you have the person who's ill, a lot of us are putting so much focus on the person who is ill, not realizing that the caregiver has emotions, has a heart, and also could become ill because they're not taking care of themselves, which is a huge, huge
almost half of all like full-time caregivers end up with depression. I think 20% of all caregivers end up with depression. So it's like a real problem. And I think it's like incredibly important, like you're saying, for you know, there's this phrase like put on your own oxygen mask before helping others. Like if you're not taking care of yourself as a caregiver, you're going from there being one person who needs help to there being two people who need help, right?
Yeah.
You're like, you're creating more of a problem. And it's just so important to take care of yourself first and foremost.
It is. In fact, I have a short story to share with the two of you because I just recently found out with a coworker, you know, I work remotely. This is just kind of my love and passion and takes up a whole lot of time. But so a coworker's mom had cancer, and she went back to help her mom back in May in Taiwan, and so her mom passed away in July, so she flew back to the States and went back to work, and everybody's just like, you don't look good, you know, you look sick. And she said, well, I lost 16 pounds, you know, I was helping my mom. Right, from May to July. Well, here we are, September 1. She died last week.
Oh, my God.
She had cancer. She didn't even know. She spent so much time helping her mom. She didn't know. She was just putting it up. I mean, all that time, but she's just saying, I was tired helping my mom. And it wasn't until another coworker said, you should go to the doctors because you look really sick. So, but anyhow, but yes, Robert and all caregivers are very, very important in this whole grand scheme of things. And we need to do our part to help the caregiver as well.
Yeah.
So, Nancy, so like we were saying, who were you before 2016? In the summer of 2016, you got that, you know, awful, awful message from the doctors that you have ovarian cancer. And I know you went through other cancer too, and you just, there's so much that you went through, but who were you before 2016? And then what was your mindset when you heard those words?
Thanks, Chuck. Yeah, before June of 2016, I had the life I think most people only dream of. I was a very successful relationship and wellness coach. I had a wonderful husband that loved me. I had three beautiful children and many friends and family who we biked, hiked. I was always outdoors, gardening and traveling. And I was just on the go and literally loving life all the time, mostly outdoors. And the moment that I heard, you have ovarian cancer, my world stopped. my earth was shattered. And the reason, you know, it's one thing to hear, you know, something where it's something that's not going to take forever or, you know, you can get through this. But I was thrown into the hospital for a week while they gathered a team of surgeons for 8 days, for 7 days, eight surgeons, where they had a surgery with me for over 10 hours. And after that, I had weekly chemo sessions for 6 months, twice weekly infusions. I had many infections. I was back in the hospital more times than I can count. And it was a hard thing to survive. And then after that, after my remission, which was incredible that I got there, I was vacationing in Rome with a friend and I suffered a grand mal seizure, was whisked away to a public hospital where they diagnosed me with a huge brain tumor. And my daughter, wonderful daughter, helped me get back to Miami to have brain surgery, where they diagnosed me with metastatic brain cancer and informed me that I might never speak again. I might have paralysis on my right side, and my life expectancy was 5 months. Hmm. It was such a harrowing journey, and it's now 5 years that I'm alive, and I am thriving. And I'd like to say that because of my son and my daughters and my girlfriends and my whole family and an army that I had at my side, they really did teach me the lessons of how to endure this horrible cancer and make it an optimistic and fun and empowering journey. And I owe it to them, which is why, you know, so much of my life now that I have and had during the journey, and that's why I believe that I was able to endure. I don't know why I'm alive. I call it luck and everything else from my amazing doctors to prayer to all the laughing I had, to all the humor. But I owe it to my caregivers. And that's why my son was so kind to say, yeah, let's write this book and let's talk to other people about what caregiving really means.
Yeah, it's caregiving is really important. I want to ask you too, because, you know, hearing those tragic words that you have cancer and the metastatic brain cancer tumor, and hearing that you had a lavish, beautiful lifestyle prior to this, do you, with foresight, feel like you took things for granted, and then after these things happened, you kind of went, you know what? I need to start living and not taking things for granted. I ask this because you are having a beautiful, lovely life now. I mean, awesome life. It just really seems that I see the smile on both of your faces, on Robert, your son's, on his face, yours. You're happy to share this story, but it sounds like that you had this great life prior to. I don't know, how much better can it be now? And was it kind of taken for granted for before? And now you can value things a little bit more.
I wouldn't go as far as to say that she took things for granted.
Okay.
How
about you, Nancy?
Previous life. But she certainly is so much more grounded and down to earth and appreciative of things nowadays than she ever was. It's wonderful. Do you want to add anything from your side of things?
Yes, I think everyone would say that I'm much more appreciative every moment of every day, and it's wonderful to use the word, I'm more grounded, mm-hmm. But I think I'm much more, one of the things that happens to me, I can only be...
Only speak for yourself.
Yeah. I can only speak for myself, and I can only be the expert of my life. But for me, what it did for me was open up my faults, my mistakes, the way I was thinking that really made it harder for me to endure. And it wasn't where people might go to therapy and say, you know, one at a time. I had to tackle it all at once. My life mm-hmm. was literally torn apart. And so, yeah, I look at myself and others differently. I look at every moment differently. And because of that, I do see for me that my cancer in so many ways was a blessing. And I do see a world that's much more rosier, and I'm much more wanting to survive and thrive every day and make a difference. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think your priorities have changed. I think that's the big thing. I think, you know, what would have been a like setback that she just needed to absolutely fix and would like fixate on and make sure that it was, you know, everything was perfect, right? Nowadays, she can sort of roll with the punches a little bit more, you know? Like, life throws curveballs at all of us. And, you know, she used to insist that they were fast, like, on making them fastballs, and nowadays she just swings for the curveballs instead. Yeah.
You know, that makes perfect sense, or a great analogy on that, too, because I would imagine, and I don't want to say that this is how it was or how you are or were, but... you may end up being a little bit more kind to people. You may be a little bit more forgiving. It's okay if Robert, you know, comes over and leaves his socks on the floor, you know, at your place.
That's still not okay.
Still not okay.
I have my boundaries.
But and Robert, you kind of answered what I wanted to ask, is if you have seen any changes in your mom, you know, since she has gone through all of this. And you did answer a little bit, but can you elaborate a little bit more on these positive changes that you've seen in your mom? And how has it changed you from fearing that you may lose your mom to seeing her thriving for these 5 years and for another 10 or 20 or 30 years. I don't know if you want to live to be 100 plus. Some say they don't, but
so. She's in phenomenal shape. You know, so maybe, you know, could be 40. You know, cancer does sort of leave its mark. So who knows how long she's actually got, but, we go rock climbing and skiing and play tennis and stuff like that together. So she's in incredible shape right now. As far as what I saw changed my mom, certainly she's more optimistic now than she ever was. I think she's, you know, she's seen the worst that life has to offer, at least, you know, from one side of things. There are, you know, plenty of other hardships people go through that are equally difficult on wildly different axes. She has this ability to see the positive in things now that she never used to. And I think she's really sort of given that to all of us as well. You know, when she was going through cancer, she was this like emaciated shell of herself. Like this woman has always been a strong and powerful woman. Sometimes to my chagrin, when I was growing up, she taught aerobics classes at 5 a.m. and she made 7-year-old me go to aerobics classes at 5 a.m. And it turns out 7-year-olds don't like being up at that time. So that you know, that's a strong, powerful woman that she was. And then suddenly she's lost 25, 30 pounds, has no muscle mass. Her thighs were, you know, thinner than my wrists right now. Like it just like this tiny shell of a you know, formerly strong woman. And, you know, every moment that she was able to like laugh or smile or something like that while going through that is just reminds you that, you know, even when you're going through the worst times, there's still moments where you can be happy, still moments where you can find fun. So I think that optimism is really carried through to the rest of us as well.
That's great.
I'd like to say I do laugh at life a lot more.
Yeah.
You know, I found that he's really good at humor, and some of my friends are really good at humor. And we suffered some ridiculous moments when either nurses or without meaning to, would say horrific things. And what we would end up doing is laugh out loud hysterically. Yeah. So I would say that that's something that is carried through for me is truly looking at the ridiculous of life, you know, ridiculousness of life. It's like...
There's this great phrase I love that comedy is just tragedy plus time. And she like... He was like, hey, why do we even need this time thing? Like, just, comedy's just ready. Let's go. Full circle.
That is something I would suggest to every human being right now is like, just start laughing at everything in life. It makes you really a better person for everybody and especially for your soul, you know?
I mean, you're right. I mean, we have heard, you know, in the past, or at least for the older people, you know, laughter is a great cure. It cures a lot. And just the same as, you know, an apple a day keeps a doctor away. It's just laughter. And I think that lowers your stress because stress can lead to a lot of illnesses, whether mental or physical. So the one thing I'm glad what you said, Robert, is that your mom went through this terrible thing, but she's not the only person. And then there are other tragedies that happen to other people out there all the time. Because it'd be great to have people know that this is a story of two people, of many people. This is the main story on cancer, metastatic brain cancer. But there are so much similarities, and it doesn't matter what your illness is. You have a caregiver and you have a person who's ill. You have people who love each other, and that love helps you, you know, go through things. So I would like to ask you, Nancy, did you ever lose hope that you would get better and that there would be a cure for you? And I use cure lightly because, you know, like I said, things go away, could come back, but I just want to say cure. And so going back to what I said about hope, did you ever lose hope, sight of you being better?
Oh, yes. I lost hope. I don't even know what to say next. Yes, it was. I was ready to give up multiple times. And at one point, I really wanted to give up hope.
So, Robert, did you see that in her, that she was?
Like, oh, yes. Oh, she very clearly gave up hope. One time in particular. But there were a lot of times when you could sort of see the fight leave her. And it was really important for us caregivers. And I don't want to take full credit for that. I am not her only caregiver. She had an army behind her. I was one of many, thank God, because I couldn't have done it on my own, and I don't think any of us could have done it on our own.
It was a tough battle. Let's just say it that way.
But, there were times where we had to talk her off a metaphorical or literal cliff. But she listened. You know, that's important. I think it was important for us to... Like, we had to be vulnerable in those moments. You know, we had to tell her, like, how her decision to give up made us feel, why it was important to us that she stick around, and it's tough to be vulnerable. I think people are, like, especially bad at it. They see it as a weakness, and I don't think it is. I think it's actually, it takes strength to be vulnerable. It's really challenging.
It does. I want to ask you on this one too, Robert, because I know certain things, if people are feeling bad or feeling lonely and depressed, you know, happy memories, happy sounds bring us back, and you have to be an accomplished pianist. So would you say?
I have accomplished life-saving with my piano skills, if nothing else.
So I want to ask you, do you feel like that music, what you did, playing those sounds, whether it be familiar or not for your mom, do you think music helped her bring her back to this positive place and give her some hope and strength? I mean, your mom's shaking her head like, yes, it did.
Yeah.
Did you see that happen, Robert, when you're sitting there playing Chopin or whatever it is you might have been playing?
So I play a lot of songs by ear. I love playing like Disney songs or like classic rock or, things from musicals, stuff like that. Stuff that like I can sing along to or other people can sing along to. And the most notable time during her first stint at the hospital when she was first diagnosed, She showed up to the hospital like 25 pounds underweight. She's not a large woman. So 25 pounds is a lot. But she showed up to the hospital 25 pounds underweight. And her doctors needed a week to gather a team of specialists to operate. And she's just stuck in this, you know, hospital room. It's not a welcoming place, you know, beeps, whirs, and clicks of machines, this whole, you know, just white, very clean environment that doesn't feel very welcoming at all. So the first thing we did was we realized that we needed to change something. And so we did. We grabbed some of her favorite possessions from home, a couple of plants to sort of like spruce up the area, her like pillow and blankets and stuff like that to make her feel comfortable in bed. And this stuffed animal that she's had since she was six, a little, little Tigger stuffed animal that has seen better days. But, you know, still has like all of the sentimental attachment to it that you know nothing else could possibly have. And it still wasn't quite enough. So my dad and I went to a local music store and grabbed an electric piano that's actually sitting next to us right now. And like confidently walked her through the halls of the hospital, like people like looking at us like, what are those guys doing? and you know, plunked it down in her room and just started playing. And I think I played for 4 or 5 hours a day for a week straight. It was clear, like the moment I started playing, you could see like the light start to come back to her eyes. And
I'd like to join in.
I'm not sure she would have made it otherwise.
No, but the doctors were singing, the nurses were singing, and he was this favorite in the hall because all the other patients could hear him. So it wasn't just me that he was helping. He was helping everyone on that hall.
Yeah. So Robert, did it give you any sense of comfort and release of any negative energy or anything like that you had when you started playing? Absolutely. Did it help you?
I think, you know, music, really all forms of creative expression are a wonderful way to not just get your emotions out, but also like restore some of your humanity. And for me, playing the piano and singing are my two big ones. And so getting to do both of them, you know, is incredibly helpful. It was very cathartic for me. It also gave me like a sense of purpose, which is so important. You know, it's easy to feel helpless when you're seeing, you know, a loved one just sort of like sitting in this bed and like, I'm not a doctor. I don't know what I could possibly do. But you can help. You can help with their emotional state, and that's just as important, right? Like no one's winning this fight if they don't have a reason to win this fight. You need to remind them why they want to live. And so, you know, for me, it's playing piano, but for you, it might be telling jokes or reading your favorite book or, you know, sketching a picture of them. It doesn't really matter as long as you're sharing a passion of yours with them. That'll remind them of their humanity and remind them why it is that they're fighting this fight.
So with that being said, the two of you co-authored a book together that'll be coming out this fall of 2023. And can you give us the title and your webpage? I'm looking at it, but I'd rather hear it from you, and I think everybody else would as well.
Yeah.
So your website, I'll just do it real quick and then you can tell us about the book and the book title and everything. It kind of goes along with it, is Becoming the Better You. And it's not Y-O-U on the website, on the URL. It's Becoming the Better You with the letter U.com.
Yeah. Becoming the Best You.
Oh, best. But, I'm sorry. Becoming the best you.
I understand. But.
And I got this poor eyesight. I'm looking up there going,
some comparative adjective of some sort.
That is called an edit right there.
Better, best, yeah, whatever, you know.
There is a step along the way. But hopefully... Becoming the Best You, the letter U is the website, and the book is Becoming the Best You While Watching Your Life Go Down the Drain, The Lessons Cancer Taught Me.
Yeah, and again, although and even though this was your cancer story, this is going to resonate, I think, with people who have had all illnesses across the board. And again, not just the patient or the person that's going through the illness, but the caregiver person as well. Whether it be several people or one person, because the two of you wrote this, and I'm just looking at the cover of the book, and you know, it's, you look at the book cover and you look at you, Nancy, drastic difference and change, just your position that you're sitting there by the river, the bridge, you know, shaved head, just thinking or contemplating, whether it be, where do I go from now, or why did it happen to me, or what's next? But it's such a drastic difference, just looking at you there. Yeah, and are these some of the chapters, the change what you can, ask for help, and things like that? Titles of some of the chapters?
Yes, I mean, the chapters are fun chapters, you know, like, you know,
how did you get a piano in here?
Are you there, doc? It's me, cancer. You know, but the steps along the way are, in fact, you know, asking for help and getting your affairs in order and pushing yourself and taking life one step at a time and packing a toolbox of strategies. And lastly, accepting that grief is a price we pay for love. And they're all in there. We just have fun chapter titles, but they're all so important. And I do agree that, you know, the lessons I learned are lessons for actually everyone, because these lessons, these are my mantras, and that's what has helped me every day when more challenges come up. You know, life is not for the faint of heart. That's what I always say. So yeah. Thanks, Chuck.
This might be a little bit of a change away from what we're talking about, but you kind of mentioned being prepared, being ready, having your affairs in order. So I would imagine so many people don't do that until the last minute, which can add some additional stress. So would you, or the two of you, would you say, you know what, don't wait till you get sick or till the end. Get things in order now, whether it be, you know, DNRs, wills, things like that. Would you tend to agree? And don't look at it as a negative thing, right? Meaning that just because you're preparing for this doesn't mean that that person's going to end. This is just part of living, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's, I mean, DNRs and wills and all those sorts of things are so important. Also, funeral plans, what you want to be done with your body. You know, a lot of these things, they seem like end-of-life plans, but it's, a lot of it's really just deciding what's important to you now, right? Like a will isn't like, what do I want to happen after I'm gone? It's like, who's important to me in life? What causes are important to me in life? You know, do I want to donate some of my money to a charity that I particularly like?
This is something that I've asked everyone to do, whether you're 35 or 75, is number one, have that discussion with your loved ones. How do I want to be remembered? How do I want to be buried? How do I want the service to look like? Yeah. Who do I want, if there is a charity, to start setting that up? And I do believe, we've always been saying this, Robert and I, is that the more that your loved ones know how you want your life to be remembered and how you want your will to go, you are saving everyone from difficult, challenging discussions. And sometimes it's more divisive. You don't want, when you die, to tear your family apart. You want it to be a celebration of life.
Yeah.
And that's the most important thing.
Yeah. But it's also, it's important that it is deciding what's important to you now, right? And that's something that is useful to know, whether or not I die tomorrow. It's important to know what's important to me right now.
Right.
And you know.
Yeah.
So I think those discussions are very important for people to have.
No, that's so correct. I agree with you on this. It does help you. Like, I got my affairs in order.
Right.
And what happened to me is, I got to really think about what I wanted. And that's, again, why is my life better than it was? Yeah. It's because I had not had that discussion. Right.
What do I want to be remembered for?
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be like, what have I done in the past? It can also be like, what can I do in the future to be remembered for, you know? Like that can give you a purpose, set your life, set a goal for yourself.
That's why I wrote the book.
Yeah.
That's why we wrote the book, is I said, I want to be able to give back after all this.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and just listening to the two of you, I definitely think you've accomplished what you have set out to do in your book. I'm just sitting here hoping, going, boy, I hope the personalities are in the pages of this book, because if it is, this is the number one bestseller on New York Times list. You know, it's.
Can't wait. Because there's that.
It'll reach more people. Yeah. Imagine how many people will have their whatever journey, their obstacles in life, a lot more optimistic and fun. People don't like using the word fun, but you can make a cancer journey or any horrible journey more fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well,
we did some
I truly believe your book is going to help a lot of people. It's just a matter of now the people putting it into their hands and really reading your book. Once it comes out here, like I said, fall 23, there's no reason not to, right? You learn from others' experiences. And this is going to give you this head start or advanced look at, well, this is what they went through. Maybe I should or could follow something similar to that. Or now I understand what the pain points are. Now my son or my daughter or whoever's a caregiver understands a little bit about the emotions that they may be going through. And it's okay to have these emotions. You know? So for me, to the two of you, I say thank you on that. Gosh, I'm going to call this a session. This session has been wonderful. Now I'm prepared.
You are so wonderful, Chuck. I love what you're doing. It's incredible.
Thanks. The one last thing for me that I want to say about this, and since we talked about wills and DNRs and having your affairs in order, just because you do that, like you said, whether you're 25, 35, 40, whenever you put it together, it's not set in stone. It's just got things in order. You can always change that. It's better to do now and to be prepared. So.
Excellent.
Exactly, yeah.
Any last words from the two of you as far as your book or how you're feeling? How are the two of you today? How are you doing?
Wonderful. I'm wonderful. I think she's wonderful.
I'm wonderful. I think it's the best I've ever been. And I would say the same with Robert.
Yeah, absolutely best. Best either of us have ever been.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. And I want to say one thing about the book.
Yeah.
The book is a really short read.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, you sit down, you could read it in 2 hours. And we did this on purpose because the people that we really want everyone to reach, you don't have the time. You might not have the energy. So trust that if you just open it up and read a few pages, sit down, I think that no matter what, people can glean either perspective of how grateful they are that they have their health, which is a beautiful thing to be, and just getting one idea of how they can make either being a caregiver or being a patient or a survivor a little bit more optimistic and look at life a little differently.
You know what? It really sounds like this is a book that you don't read and put away. You know, there's a lot of books you read, and when you're done, you put it on the shelf. You don't read it again. But this one sounds like it's something that you could pick up. Like I said, read a couple pages, read a chapter, go read it again in 5 days if you want, put it away, read the entire book on a weekend, come back 6 months later, pick it up and read it again. And it's a feel-good book, right? If absolutely. I'm saying it's wrong... Yeah. But it just sounds like it's one of those books that'll be a feel good. It puts you in that place of understanding. So, Robert, are you going to continue playing the piano or are you going to start? Are you going out for the next vocalist for Journey?
No. They got that covered. I'm not entering any YouTube competitions anytime soon.
Well, from what I hear, there's trouble in that band. So there may be a position open.
All right. Well, I'm just a small town boy, so.
Again, this has been, I've enjoyed the conversation, and I've enjoyed just honestly seeing the two of your faces and just listening to you. This is great. I feel good now. You two made me feel good. Thank you very much for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We're very grateful for being on your show.
Hopefully we can shoehorn those bits together.
Yep. So should I hit the stop button now?
Yes.
I think we're good.
Chuck, you've been incredible.